Testing. Hello, willkommen, bienvenue, konnichiwa. It's time for the Armist Inquisition yet again, episode 322 on Sunday the 24th of March, 2024.
All right, hang on 1 second, guys. I just realized something.
Whoa, what's happening?
Who's that?
Someone's, I don't know. Well, let's find out. I'm Phil.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight, hopefully...
He's back. I was getting an echo because I set up the YouTube feed on my laptop earlier, right, just to see how it looked, and that started off because I hadn't turned it off yet. So I think we are all set to go. All the technical difficulties have been resolved.
God,
let
yes.
us proceed.
If only we had some obscure 20th century scientists to help us navigate this technical world we live in, Paul. Because that's your deal. You're a biographer, correct?
I have written two biographies of obscure 20th century scientists, yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, well, I'm particularly interested in the second book, the follow-up book, about because you've done one on, is it Philo, Alex, Philo T.
Yeah,
Farnsworth?
Yeah, the first book that I wrote, which was a story that I discovered in the 1970s, is a biography of a man named Philo T. Farnsworth. And all I will tell you for now about Farnsworth is that he drew a sketch for his high school science teacher when he was 14 years old in 1922. And every video screen on the planet, including the ones we are looking at now, traces its origins to that sketch.
Wow.
So the fact that our screens our lives are dominated by these screens, but we have no knowledge of the man who made all of this technology possible is just one of the wonders of the 20th and 21st centuries.
Is he a transistor guy or an LCD guy?
I'm sorry?
This Philo guy.
Yeah.
Is he something to do with the invention of transistors?
Not directly, no. He developed the camera tube.
Ah, okay.
Using cathode ray tubes.
Cathode ray, yeah.
His primary invention was the camera tube that made high resolution possible. Prior to that, television was being attempted with mechanical devices that used spinning discs with a perforation of spiral perforation of holes to try and scan an image.
It's funny you say that.
But
that
was never going
exactly...
to go fast enough to produce the resolutions that we're looking at now.
That's exactly
what's
going on.
His invention
was
to take all the moving parts out of it and put a pure expression of Einstein's photoelectric effect in a vacuum tube. So it was a very relativistic invention that he dreamed up when he was 14 years old in 1922.
14,
wow.
Geez.
Is that like rotoscope? Yeah. There was something called rotoscope that they used to use back in the day. Is that a similar tech?
Rotoscope, I think that was one of the early motion picture technologies. I know I've heard that name, but I can't pin down exactly what the origins of it is. There were a lot of names going around at the time. Yeah. Television was referred to as radioscope or a teleramophone. There were a lot of names for it before television was finally settled in. And of course, what we're talking about really is video and all the many ways that video is the most ubiquitous thing that's ever been invented.
Yeah. One of the things I was listening to you with Greg Carlwood earlier today. And something that really I found particularly interesting, made me think, was, you know, since the end of the Second World War, we've had like a huge boom in sort of material sciences and physical technology in that way. You know, we've gone from vinyl records or ceramics to mini discs, lasers, microchips, and all this. But as far as like theoretical physics, since that point, we've kind of hit a bit of a brick wall, and it's just sort of drifted into obscure nonsense that's not useful.
Well, it's very interesting that you hit on that theme, because it's one that has been recurring in my own loops here in the past few weeks. And the video that I did with Jesse Michaels, he talks to people like Eric Weinstein and Hal Puthoff, and they make the assertion that there have been no big breakthroughs in theoretical physics in the last 60 years or so. Eric Weinstein says that string theory, which was a big popular theory for a long time, was a dead end. There was a theory of gravitation called quantum theory. That's turned into a dead end. So we have this recurring kind of realization that we haven't had in the last half of the 20th and early parts of the 21st centuries, the kind of breakthroughs that we had at the beginning of the 20th century, when our whole concept of the universe was altered in 1 year by the four papers that Albert Einstein released. And that started with the photoelectric effect, for which he received his Nobel Prize in 1921. And then the last paper was, or the third paper, I think, was general relativity, which also introduces E equals mc squared. There have not been those kinds of big shifts in our cosmological understanding of the universe as there was 100 years ago in the last 60 years. And to almost validate that perception, I have in my files here a story that appeared in the New York Times about 2 years ago, which starts with the headline that all scientific breakthroughs stopped, and they actually used the date 1945. And so I then ask the rhetorical question, can we think of anything that happened in 1945 which might have caused the sources of our scientific breakthroughs to have pause in sharing any more such breakthroughs with us? Now, can you think of anything that happened in 1945?
Oppenheimer.
Yeah, a nuclear bomb, his name.
There you go. That's it. Yeah.
But they have developed like more massive and more destructive bombs since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, haven't they?
Well, yippee!
I'm not saying it's a good all thing, but...
Yeah. And it's only by a wonderment of the theory of mutually assured destruction that we haven't.
Right. So they're hiding from something from us, are they, then?
Yeah. I'm going to share with you. So since we're already off on this wonderful tangent, I will introduce to the conversation a quotation that I have been citing a bit recently, which will get us perhaps toward the metaphysical theme in all this. So this is something that we talked about Philo Farnsworth. We haven't gotten to Townsend Brown yet, but I'm sure we will. But since we're talking about Farnsworth, at the end of his life, when he was being lauded for having made all this screen technology possible with his inventions in the 1920s and 30s, Philo T. Farnsworth said, "I know that God exists. I know that I have never invented anything. I have been a medium by which these things were given to the culture as fast as the culture could earn them. I give all the credit to God." And so I will extrapolate from that the theory that I have been expressing, having the nerve to express lately, that all the information that that humans have received over the span of millennia has been metered out to us by a higher power, a higher source, a supreme intelligence that Farnsworth refers to as God. And in my program of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I've been in for 36 years, by the way, we just refer to a higher power. So I am offering right at the start here the postulate that the higher power shared with us some of the greatest secrets of the universe at the turn of the 20th century, and then sat back to see what we would do with that information, Then they saw what we did with it starting in 1945 and said, okay, that's enough. Yeah. And there have been no great scientific breakthroughs ever since. So it's time for the for our humanity to catch up with our technology.
That's always been a big fear, isn't it? That as a species, we're kind of there's been a danger that our technological advancement would outpace our common sense or our sense of humanity, yeah. And that we sort of.
I think we can readily agree that that's the case. I also ran into a biologist recently. His name is Edward O. Wilson, and he made the observation that the problem with mankind is that we are governed by Paleolithic emotions. We are constrained by medieval institutions, and we are overwhelmed with godlike technologies. And isn't that it in a nutshell? That's our dilemma.
Yep. It's a great point.
Yeah. So I'll just, you know, take the initiative here, and I say that what I've been privileged to see in the work that I've done over the course of my lifetime, I think are indications of advanced technologies that have been revealed to mankind, but that remain out of our grasp. They are within our reach, but they're outside of our grasp. And that's the central theme that I draw with the biography of Philo T. Farnsworth, who went on in the later years of his life to develop a nuclear fusion process. And then with Thomas Townsend Brown, whose story revolves around the mystery of whether he found a way to synthesize gravity.
Right, so you don't like the term anti-gravity, do you, Paul? You have a problem with it?
Yeah, I've said that, you know, many times. It's because it kind of reverses what's actually going on. I mean, I can understand how you arrive at that terminology as a conclusion, but we are not simply negating gravity as we are. If what we're talking about is true, we are synthesizing gravity. We are creating an alternate gravitational field, which has the effect of like if you have two magnets. So if you have a magnet with the North Pole facing up, and then you have an electromagnet, and then you begin to add the current of that electromagnet, and that has the North Pole facing down, they will repel each other. And that's what I believe Townsend Brown was doing with what I would describe as a synthetic or artificial gravitational effect. But anti-gravity is kind of the common cultural term. But I think there's just a misconception embodied in that I think is better expressed by saying synthetic gravity or gravity control.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's go in.
And then that obviously. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go on. Carry on.
Well, I was going to say, what's interesting and intriguing about the story is that when you begin to talk about being able to produce artificial gravity, then you go back to Einstein's 1915 theory of general relativity, where he redefines gravity as the curvature in the space-time continuum, where space and time are the fabric of the same continuum, and then the theory becomes that the enticing theory is that if you have now the electrical means by which you can bend space in order to induce artificial gravity, you're also bending time.
Yikes. We'll save that till later.
And I can sure see where if there's a higher intelligence in the universe that is metering this information out to us, that they may have revealed it to certain individuals in the course of their lifetime in the first half of the 20th century. But once they saw what we've been doing with this information in the second half of the 20th century, they figured, well, okay, these kids need to grow up before they can get the keys to the cosmic Ferrari.
Let's go back. Tell us a bit about the story of Townsend Brown, Thomas Townsend Brown. Like, when was he born? Where did he grow up? What's his sort of background?
All right. So I'll start by making the observation that both Townsend Brown and Philo T. Farnsworth, the two people that I've written about, were born within a year of Einstein's Annus Mirabilis, 1905. So Brown was born in 1905. Farnsworth in 1906. So they grew up in a world in which the paradigm had already shifted. And Townsend Brown was the scion, the heir to a construction and granite quarry fortune in Ohio, here in the United States, and was raised in a very affluent environment. His parents had the means to indulge his very youthful interest in all things electrical and electronic. There's a story in the book where a visitor to the house sees this kid out in the yard, and he's just scooping earthworms off the ground because he says he has electrified the fence, and that is causing the earthworms to scurry to the surface. So already at the age of 10, he is showing an advanced knowledge with things electrical. He's building radio sets as a teenager, comes to the attention of the national security establishment, such as it was during World War I, because they were afraid that with his radio system, he might be able to transmit or receive signals from the Germans.
When he was a teenager?
So that was his first. When he was a teenager, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he had a kind of a spotty education. And the story is that when he did get to MIT for a while, and he studied with a Nobel laureate by the name of Robert Millikan, who received his Nobel Prize for determining the electrical charge of an electron. But he was not enamored of the regimentation of the routines that freshmen had to deal with in the environment of MIT, but he nevertheless, during a demonstration at MIT of something called a Coolidge tube, which is an X-ray tube, he observed that when the X-ray tube was hung in a harness so that it could swing, that when the voltage was applied to it, that it had a tendency to surge or thrust in one direction. And that was the genesis of all the discoveries and all the work that he did, starting again as he was a teenager. He left MIT and went back to Ohio and studied at Denison University with a professor there, the astronomer who ran the Zwayze Observatory at Denison, and got into talking with him about what he had discovered, and was talking about what Einstein was working on at the time, which was the unified field. Einstein was basically looking for the connection between electromagnetism and gravity. And when Townsend Brown, who had observed this phenomenon, was discussing it with his professor Biefeld, he asked Biefeld, how might a device that could couple electricity with gravity, how would it manifest? Biefeld said it would probably be in something like a capacitor. And so there, in a very quick thumbnail sketch, is the essential arc of the early story, the genesis of Townsend Brown, and how he comes to be building asymmetric capacitors, which may or may not have actually demonstrated an anti-gravity effect.
So he was kind of a man of leisure in some ways.
You caught me. I went and I used the term anti-gravity there, so I'm busted.
So he's obviously a man of means, which allowed him to pursue his passion without having to, get a real
job. His family was quite wealthy. They had an enormous estate and properties in Ohio, a big ranch in Kansas with, I think, there's something in the book about how the ranch had 300 miles of barbed wire. And they also had an estate in Pasadena, and he built his own laboratory there in the mansion in Pasadena as well.
Yeah. Did he have any dealings with JPL? Who's the guy who set up JPL?
The Rocket Lab.
So that's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena?
The guy.
Directly. Yeah.
Because there was L. Ron Hubbard.
Grumman.
L. Ron Hubbard was knocking around with him, and they were into Aleister Crowley and all sorts.
Bob, something Grumman, isn't it?
Well, when you mention L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, the name that comes to mind is Alva Kitzelman, who was a friend, I believe, of Hubbard's. And I haven't got a great mastery of the details here, but Kitzelman said at one point that he had had a conversation with Hubbard that planted the seed in Hubbard's mind that eventually became Dianetics and Scientology. So all this stuff is strangely interconnected.
Man, it's there is a lot of strange connections back then, isn't there, in amongst
Jack,
all this stuff?
Jack Parsons, yeah. That's who I'm thinking of.
Jack Parsons.
Jack Parsons, uh-huh. We did a show on a while back.
Now, that's not a name that I readily recall.
No, Oh, fair enough. He's probably another obscure 20th century scientist who you could delve into for your next book, Paul.
Well.
So.
It took me 25 years to write the first one. It took me 25 years to write the second one. And I'm 73 now. Do the math.
Yeah, you got another couple of books in you. Yeah. Are you a pessimist? So we left Townsend Brown, who is a sort of a young man. Tell us about it, because doesn't he go into the military?
Yeah, he entered the Navy in 1930. Now, the family did suffer some financial setbacks along with the rest of the world after the crash in 1929. And he said at the time that he had always loved the Navy and boats, and there's at least one good story about a time when he went sailing with his fiance in 1926 or thereabouts. But yeah, he joined the Navy thinking that he might be able to get some help there with the things that he was working on, and he wound up at an institution here in the United States called the Naval Research Laboratory. And he actually did some interesting work with them in the fluid dielectric version of what we're talking about. There's two ways that what we're calling the Biefeld-Brown effect, which is his primary discovery, the two ways that it manifests are with fluid dielectrics, which can be air or liquids, or solid dielectrics. And it's the solid dielectrics where we believe we find the artificial gravity effect or the synthetic gravity effect. But he did some work with the NRL with the fluid dielectrics and came up with a whole system where if you ran the fluid through the device, it would generate electricity. If you ran the device through the fluid, let me think. There were three manifestations of it, and I haven't talked about that lately, so I don't know if I can rattle them all off. But it was a complete system based on the fluid dielectric effect.
Right. You'll have to explain the term.
And there's been some speculation also that was what may have gone into what the movie Hunt for Red October called the electromagnetodynamic drive, that's the silent drive that ran the submarine, the silent submarine.
So
that's the kind of work he was doing at the.
Yeah. When you say dielectrics, is this the. What he found with the cathodes, when you had a cathode where one ray was longer than the other or something, that you had this effect.
So when we're talking about a capacitor, there's basically three components to a capacitor. You have a negatively charged electrode, you have a positively charged electrode, and then you have the substance between them, which is called the dielectric. And it's the dielectric that causes the storage of the charge, which makes it a capacitor. And then that charge is released into whatever circuit you're building. So the capacitor, the dielectric, can be either a fluid. Now, have you availed yourself to any of the videos on the internet of the lifters, the triangular kite-looking things with the aluminum foil at one end and the wire at the other?
I'm sure.
Those are all attributed to Townsend Brown. And that's using a fluid dielectric. There's air between the two components of those devices. So that's a fluid dielectric, and it's actually ionic wind that causes them to levitate. But the solid dielectric, I've got a sample of it here. This is a material called barium titanate, and it has a very high, what's called the K level, which is the ability to store the electric charge. And this barium titanate has a very high K level and has been used in demonstrations of the Townsend Brown gravitator.
Would I be right in thinking, are most capacitors, do they have a ceramic dielectric? Is that right?
I think it's a variety of materials.
Right.
Some of them are ceramic. Others are more like silicon.
Right. I mean, the idea is anyone, if you've ever worked on a computer, once you open the take the lid off a computer, you've got to earth or ground the insides, because these capacitors, same with guitar amps, they can store a big whacking voltage and give you a shock if you touch the wrong part. Yeah. So this is the nature of a capacitor. And so I guess what's interesting about these lifters you just mentioned, so these are things that can levitate, they can produce lift, but there's no moving parts.
There's no moving parts.
Yeah, so we're not like a drone would have a rotating
blade,
yeah, like a helicopter. Yeah. You have like jump jets, which use thrust from combustion engines, essentially. But this is what's so special about the lifters. This thing is lifting off the ground without having any moving parts.
But there's a couple of things to say about the lifters. The first is that I'll describe it for you. You imagine a triangle at the base, which is about 2 inches of aluminum foil. So you've got, you know, three sides of aluminum foil about 2 inches high. At each corner of the three points of the triangle, there's a balsa wood post and then a wire connecting the tops of the balsa wood post in that triangle. So now you have this triangular aluminum foil base and the posts that separate the base from the wire above. And when it is charged, when you apply a voltage to it, the wire becomes charged and it's positively charged and generates an ion flow. And it's that ion flow that causes the lifter to jump off the table. So, I mean, it just literally goes zoop like that. And it has to be tethered down or it'll fly away. But the pertinent point is it has to be connected to an electrical source.
Right.
So you have a power supply over here that generates the voltage, hundreds of kilowatts, that are then applied to. But it has to be connected to that at all times. And you can't bring that with you.
Got you.
So it's an interesting demonstration of a principle, but absent the ability to put a power supply on it, it's not going very far.
What about photovoltaic power supply? Would that be feasible?
Not very efficient.
That's a possibility, except that when we're talking about photovoltaics and solar power, we're doing really well if we can get a centawatt out of it. If we can get 100 watts, and we're talking about kilowatts, and the understanding around the Biefeld-Brown effect is you don't really start to get the connection between electricity and gravity until you're talking megawatts.
What about traveling a vacuum, Paul?
Okay, so that's one of the things that people often ask about the Townsend-Brown effect or the Biefeld-Brown effect. Does it work in a vacuum? And there's actually, in 2006, we have a show here, and I love it, by the way. I haven't even talked at all about, you know, I get to be in the UK with you guys because I'm an Anglophile. So I don't know if you know, we have a show here in the States called Mythbusters. I don't think it's on anymore. And they actually did a demonstration where they put a lifter in a vacuum chamber, and when it didn't work, when it didn't lift in the vacuum chamber, they said, okay, so that proves that there's no anti-gravitic effect, no electrogravitic effect. But there never would have been, because you've removed the air, so you're not going to get the ionized air. It's not going to lift. But if you use the solid dielectrics, it's an entirely different proposition. And there are records of tests that have been done in vacuum chambers with solid dielectrics where we do see the evidence of this electrogravitic effect.
Do the solid do they degrade over time, over use?
I don't have good data on that because I'm not aware of tests that have been done where the effect has been tested for any long period of time. So that's a good question. We'll have to build one and test it.
I don't know if anyone knows where I'm going here, but I am going into space as a potential sort of ion drive engine. Because you don't have to have a lot of motion in space. A little bit of acceleration will get you a long way over a period of time because there's no resistance, particle resistance, because you're in a vacuum. If that solid dielectric stuff doesn't degrade, then would that not be an interesting source for probes? Obviously not people. I wouldn't want to be... Don't want to be probed.
Well... But, I believe your hypothesis is worthy.
Yes. Finally.
You know, and I say, you know, it's a hypothesis. It's a worthy one, meaning it's worthy of further investigation using the scientific method to determine if it's valid or not. I would also encourage us to think in an entirely different dimension, that if, in fact, again, what we're talking about is producing artificial gravitational fields, then what impact does that have on the space around us? And do we even need an ion drive, or can we produce enough of effect to bend the space so that our destination becomes that much closer?
A warp drive. It's called a warp drive. Yeah. Wormhole drive.
Yes.
Excellent.
Let me drop another little thought bomb into this conversation, because I love where this is
keep
going.
Loving
again,
them, yeah.
This is another quotation from Philo Farnsworth, who had his own dreams about space travel, and they do dovetail nicely with some of Townsend Brown's work. But he asked the rhetorical question once, why do we think we need to spend so much energy to travel through something which is basically nothing?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the trick is getting into the nothing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The trick is getting out of the atmosphere. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you
right.
know,
and so far, the only way we have found to get out of the atmosphere is what I like to describe.
Massive fucking explosions.
It is this. I'm sorry that I interrupted us.
No,
stream there.
No, it's fine. Go.
The only way we have figured to get out of the atmosphere so far is by using what is essentially the same force that cavemen used to barbecue their wildebeests.
Mm. Yeah.
Very old.
It's fire. It's just fire. It's very concentrated fire, but it is a chemical reaction, as is fire. And when you look at modern rocketry, you're looking at an equation where most of the fuel is burned up, getting the rest of the fuel off the launch pad.
Yeah.
So inefficient.
Yeah,
it's a tad inefficient. So let me tell you this story, because this speaks to how Townsend Brown himself described rocketry. He described it as brute and awkward force. And I think that's an apt description, particularly when you view it against what he described to his girlfriend, his fiance, Josephine, when they were courting in the 1920s. Now, he had already had whatever vision he had of how the universe works and how technology might be evolved to take advantage of other unseen forces in the universe. So on their second date, Townsend Brown takes Josephine Beale, who would later become his wife, takes her sailing on Buckeye Lake in central Ohio. And Josephine was already aware that she was being courted by somebody who had some pretty special ideas. And Townsend was comfortable with her as somebody that he could open up to and share these ideas with. So as they're sailing along Buckeye Lake, she kind of turns to him in a teasing way, says, "So, Mr. Smarty, what's going to happen in the future? What will become of mankind?" And Townsend takes a beat. And he says, "We will push away from the earth as easily as this boat pushed away from the dock. And we will sail through the heavens as easily as this boat is crossing this lake."
Nice.
So that was his vision of, let's call it, interstellar travel, as opposed to the brute and awkward force of burning up a ton of chemical propellant in order to get the rest of the propellant out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's go back to his personal stories. So I think we left it off where he was in the military, and what was the Naval Research Lab? Was it he was
the Naval Research Lab or the NRL, which was probably the United States' paramount military research facility in the 1920s and 30s. So he went to work there starting in about 1930, was in and out of the Navy throughout the 1930s, and then actually left the Navy officially once and for all in 1942. So shortly after America's involvement in World War II, he leaves the Navy. And then he went to work in Los Angeles at a place called Vega Aircraft. And that is when the work that he was doing begins to disappear behind the curtain.
So he went into the private sector just as America's getting into the Second World War. This guy is obviously brilliant and interested. You know, he'd be a useful asset to the U.S. military establishment. And they just let him wander into the private sector and leave him to it?
Well, I think that the skepticism you're expressing there is all well placed. That is probably they put him where he could do the most good for the long term war effort without being subject to whatever the constraints of military research were. By being in the private sector, he's got more latitude.
Right.
And in the same way that even though the Los Alamos project was done under the aegis of the military, it was essentially a private enterprise being developed on its own outside of the military establishment. So what he was working on, we really don't have a clear sense of, because there really are no records of it, other than the paper that he wrote, which is simply described, it's the Vega Aircraft Notes, in which he has the document that we call Structure of Space. It says it is called Structure of Space, where he is speculating about how, in fact, time and space can be manipulated.
Wow. Yeah. So I'm guessing he wasn't. Was he involved in, what's the name, the 1945?
Los Alamos in the.
Manhattan Project.
Not to our knowledge. So, no, not directly. In later years, he did work with some people who had been at Los Alamos. What was his name? Bradford Shank was somebody who had been at Los Alamos, and he worked with Brown in Los Angeles in the 1950s. So some of that work spilled over. But Brown himself was not directly involved in the Manhattan Project. And can I go on a tangent here for a moment while we're talking about the Manhattan Project?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you're probably not being not of this country. You're probably not aware of maybe you are because it's world history at this point, but every great physicist in the world had something to do with Los Alamos, including Niels Bohr showing up there and Anthony Szilard and just the greatest physicists and scientists of the time were involved somehow in the Manhattan Project. So I like to tout the name of the most prominent scientist of the middle 20th century who was not involved in the Manhattan Project. You want to guess?
Ben?
Feynman?
He was there. He was the guy, if you saw Oppenheimer, Feynman was the guy with the bongo drums.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. Yeah. Yeah, I remember now.
That was Feynman. Yeah. That's one guess. You get two more.
Oh.
If you want to.
No.
No, no idea. No idea.
Okay. Pass? Okay.
Pass.
It was Philo T. Farnsworth.
Oh.
We
should have known that.
And there is a story in my book, The Boy Who Invented Television, where he was actually approached in the 1940s by somebody who flew a private plane from Chicago in hop, skips, and jumps to where Farnsworth was encamped in Maine during World War II to invite him to work on a top secret project in Chicago, which would have been the Fermi pile where they first demonstrated controlled fission as a precursor to developing the bombs. And Farnsworth was approached and asked if he would be part of that project, and he declined the invitation. And he turned to his wife after this guest left and went back to Chicago, and he said, "I think they're building an atomic bomb, and I want no part of it."
Wow.
Fair play. Every credit.
Mm. Yeah.
Was this to do with how does Operation Paperclip work into this? Was that after the war when all the German scientists started getting shipped
off? It's funny you should ask, because I'm reading a book right now by a woman named Annie Jacobson, and it's called Operation Paperclip.
Right.
And she has done a marvelous world of research into everything that went into bringing a whole boatload of German/Nazi scientists to the United States in the 5 or 10 years after World War II, the most prominent of which, speaking of rocketry and burning great quantities of fuel to get the rest of the fuel out of the atmosphere, you know who the most prominent scientist to come over in Operation Paperclip was?
I don't know.
Werner
von Braun, is it?
There you go. Somebody right, ding, 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 ring a bell. Somebody
ding,
named
ding,
it. Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Werner von Braun.
Yep. Yeah, Werner von Braun, who was the rocket mastermind of the entire Apollo project, who basically designed the Saturn V rocket that got man to the moon, was...
Definitely not a Nazi.
German scientist during World War II.
Yeah,
well, we know it very well in Britain because, you know, when we're kids, we learn about the V1 and the V2 rocket, which was the doodle bug, they used to call it.
Doodle bug, right.
They were essentially weapons of terror. You know, they terrified the British people.
Yeah. And I've just read the passage in Annie Jacobson's book where she talks about just that. Wow. And the terror. Those devices were built for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to terrorize the British populace. And I think they succeeded in that. Sidebar, about 3 months ago, I went to Huntsville, Alabama, which is about an hour and a half south of where I live here in Nashville. And there is a rocket center there. There's a museum to America's mid-20th century rocket program, because Huntsville is where the rockets were developed and then taken to Florida for the launch. And there is one display of a Saturn V rocket stretched out, and it's just this gigantic fuel tank. But the reason I bring it up is because you mentioned the V2s, and there is one display, and it's a recreation of Werner von Braun's office there in Huntsville. And kind of behind his desk are little models of all the rockets that he built. And at the end of the display is the Saturn I, which was the first Saturn that they used to get like Apollo 8 just into Earth orbit before they took Apollo 11 all the way to the moon, to the Saturn V.
Allegedly.
And the Apollo 1 goes all the way to the ceiling. And the Saturn V is so much bigger that it has to go through a hole in the ceiling. That's how much, you know, that's how much more fuel they needed. But the reason I bring it up is because at the very beginning of this display, on the far end, it shows the V1 and the V2 rockets. And it attributes those rockets to Werner von Braun, but it doesn't make any reference to what they were used for.
Wow. Yeah. Keep quiet about that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to make too big a deal. where Dr. von Braun got his start.
Well, it's a direct lineage, isn't there, all the way back to obviously his work in Nazi Germany. And there's no getting away from it, is there? Yeah.
Basically. There isn't. No, yeah. There isn't. Yeah. If you want to, once you peel the Band-Aid off, it's all right there to see.
Yeah.
So what
happened? In the scope of human history, it's sad to say that was not so long ago.
No,
I've just started watching The World at War recently on your recommendation, Matt. I don't know. You probably didn't get it over there, Paul, but it was a BBC documentary series from the 1970s.
Mm.
Narrated by Laurence Olivier.
He's a Laurence Olivier.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And it's yeah. like...
I don't know if I've seen that one. We recently had a series here on Apple TV Plus called Masters of War, which was about the Allied bombing efforts starting in 1943. Yeah. Wow. And it was a pretty well-done series. It really goes into some depth about the stakes that the B-17s had to face when they started flying over the channel and into Germany to begin trying to eliminate the German war effort to soften up the landscape so that they could invade in 1944.
Right. Well, the U.S. Air Force were confident that they could fly in during the day. Mm. And so they had these tightly packed squadrons with some escorts, I think, as well. But they soon found out that the Luftwaffe were pretty good at shooting them down. But, yeah, for a long time, it was the US flying in the day and the Brits flying at night.
Yes.
And the bombing accuracy of the British planes was, like,
horrendous.
Horrific. Yeah. If you got a bomb within five, we're laughing about it, like, it's funny, but... If you got a bomb within 5 miles of a target, that was about average, and you might hit the odd orphanage here and there. You know, it was just completely indiscriminate.
Yeah, the Allies, they had this a very advanced bomb site, the Norden bomb site, that gave them a very high degree of accuracy. The bomb site had the ability to take into account the speed of the airplane, the altitude and the distance to the target, and release the bombs so that they would land on the target.
Yeah, they had
and they were very effective. They basically were able to wipe out the Luftwaffe before D-Day because Eisenhower had said, I can't do this if we're going to be subject to aerial bombardment. And so the Allies pretty much wiped out the Luftwaffe before D-Day in June 6, 1944.
One of my favorite things I've seen on the documentary so far is that early in the war, the Luftwaffe flew over to the UK and they destroyed most of the British Air Force on the ground when they were in hangars and on runways. And so the British government started this campaign. We need your scrap metal. Bring us your pots, your pans. We need all the metal that we can get to rebuild our Air Force. And it was complete nonsense. It was complete propaganda. And you've got movies of these guys saying, we've no idea what to do with this stuff. They've got mountains of pots and pans and jugs and jars.
It's just useless.
It was useless. It was just messaging.
Yeah. Now, was that before or after Churchill took over? Because Chamberlain, there was the whole Chamberlain thing where he just could not recognize well enough in advance what was going on in Germany and the impact that it was going to have. And then eventually Churchill took over and masterminded the effort that eventually disposed of the Germans, but it was a challenging time to say the least.
Well, I think it was when he was in charge. That was the Battle of Britain, basically. When it was it Operation Sea Lion? Was that what it was called? The invasion of Britain.
Yeah.
So, which was apparently that's what it says in the documentary. If you're up to there, it was a ruse for Operation Barbarossa,
which was the attack on the Eastern Front to Russia, pushing to Stalingrad and whatnot.
Basically, So it was 1941, I would say. I think for the Battle of Britain, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
I've been kind of revisiting a lot of this stuff because I don't know if you've heard, but we're having our own interesting political challenges here in the United States.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. It's really entertaining from this side of the pond.
Well, yeah, we've settled down recently, haven't we?
I'm glad you're enjoying it. But, there's that old saying that history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it does rhyme. Mm. And I'm not sure who said that. Maybe it was Mark Twain. But the echoes that we're getting of history in what's going on in American politics right now are, how shall we say, to an open mind, a little disturbing. So I've been kind of revisiting a lot of that old history to see how things were dealt with during that period in the 1930s and 40s in Europe. It was not one of the great periods of human history.
Are you alluding to like a rise in populism or an increased polarization? Is that the sort of vibe you have over there now?
Oh, I don't know that populism is the right word. I think fascism is probably closer to it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure where you draw the line between populism and fascism, but we'll just use the phrase autocracy, that we are we're seeing a disturbing drift in a large part of the American populace toward having somebody at the top of the chain of command who has expressed a desire to use his power, autocratically. There you go. Thank you. My mouth broke. Yeah, autocratically.
Yeah. There's an interesting statistic. Is it 40% of the world's countries or the world's population are going to the polls this year? Not Poland, yeah, the polling station. Yes, elections happening all the time. You know, I don't sort of put much weight into politics. I don't pay much attention. I just like the, I just find it entertaining more than anything else. It's, I'm more of a, whoever you vote for, the government always gets in, kind of. That's my philosophy, really. But to be fair, we haven't had a Trump.
No.
Whoa, we had a yeah. Bojo, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we did have Bojo the Clown, though, and he was he was a complete waste of space.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know. Well, you know, we had our traumatic event in 2016 with the election of Trump, and you had your traumatic event with Brexit, and I don't want to go down that avenue because I don't know how you feel about that one, but I had a friend who was in Britain at the time that that vote came through, and the way she describes the circle of people that she was in, the reaction was much the same as the circle of friends that I was in here in the States when the 2016 election was declared. So,
yeah, the thing is, people watch too much news.
We've all experienced some trauma here.
People watch too much news and too much TV, and they were saying the economy's going to collapse, we'll have no human rights, this, that, and the other, the biggest disaster in our nation's history. People just get on with their lives. And you know they just don't want to be interfered with by the government. You know, if the governments leave people alone, they'll just get on with their lives and make the best of it. But you know, we get fed a diet of headlines and news, and if it bleeds, it leads, and all the rest of it. And you got to disconnect from that shit. It's not good for you. It's not good for your brain.
if I never see a headline again that says breaking news. It'll be too soon, you know. It's like, yeah, what do you mean breaking news? It's been happening all day.
So, you know, do you think it's kind of cathartic spending your time looking back? You know, looking back into history, events that have already happened. It's a way to sort of get away from what's happening in the current milieu and, you know, sort of lose yourself in history.
You know, it's an interesting question because it is cathartic in the sense that it has a kind of a romantic quality to it, to look back on the past and see things that we've missed. And when I'm talking about the Farnsworth story, one of the things that appealed to me about it was when I began to look at the prehistory of television. Now, here I guess there's some British connections between the Farnsworth story and the history in Britain as well. But when I began to look at some of the illustrations from that period, I realized there was a whole prehistory that we had no knowledge of. You know, we see pictures of biplanes, for example, after the Wright brothers, but we don't see any pictures of the earliest forms of television from the 20s and 30s. So there's a romantic quality, and it is cathartic in the sense that you see the potential of great minds to see possibilities where others have not seen them. And that's the story of how television was introduced. It's exciting in some senses because we also get some sense, particularly with the Farnsworth and Brown stories, of what else might be possible. But then it becomes frustrating because you wind up asking the question, well, why can't we have these things? And what is holding them back? Now, we've talked with the Brown story about the apparent likelihood that he was on the threshold, at least, of finding a connection between electromagnetism and gravity that would give us the ability to produce synthetic artificial gravitational fields. And as he said to his wife, push away from the Earth as easily as their sailboat pushed away from the dock. That's the appeal, the exciting appeal of the Brown story. In the Farnsworth story, what always hooked me on that story from the very beginning was he spent the latter half of his life developing a nuclear fusion process. And I will describe that to you only by saying, by oversimplifying it, but he was developing what amounted to a device roughly the size of what you guys call a football and we call a soccer ball. So it's about this big, capable of generating megawatts of pure electricity.
Nice.
That's what Philo Farnsworth developed. He talked with Albert Einstein about it in 1948. He had a phone call with Einstein. And when Einstein heard what Farnsworth was developing, and at this point it was still in a very formative stage, he hadn't actually had the conception for the device that he went on and built in the 1950s and 60s. But he was formulating some math and some theory, and he got to talk with Albert Einstein for about an hour on the phone. And Einstein very much encouraged him to continue that work. Remember that now, as we get into the late 40s, Einstein had been, I don't know if discouraged is the right word, but he was disturbed at the role that he had played in the development of atomic weaponry and Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And he had withdrawn some from public circles and scientific research. But when he heard what Farnsworth had developed in the way of a nuclear fusion process, he was excited by it. He said, this is the good part of my work. This is the good part of my theories, and you must continue this work. And he did, and he went on and he developed a nuclear fusion process. And it's still very exciting to me. But it's a sign of we only got so far in the decades after World War II, and we've been in a kind of a scientific vacuum ever since.
It makes you wonder, just to get slightly conspiratorial for a minute, whether, you know, I don't think there's much down for you if you start messing around with free energy devices. I think you're probably going to end up...
You'll ride off a cliff on a Segway.
On a Segway, you'll have a light aviation accident, or you'll be, you know, die a heart attack in a hot tub somewhere.
Yeah, the heart attack. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the energy sector is one of the biggest industries in the world. Yeah. And anything that threatens that revenue, I mean, people wouldn't think twice of knocking someone out of the game. What's it cost to have someone
popped,
whacked? $20,000?
Ooh, I don't know.
It's small beans when you're talking about a multi.
Would you not encourage people?
I'll do it for fun.
Do you not think like that, Paul?
I'm sorry, this conversation has to end here. You didn't use my name. Did you?
You know, you wonder what...
Yeah, sorry, Andrew.
stay away from light aviation, Andrew. Poor Andrew.
I'm calling in from an undisclosed location. Yeah.
But do you not think, you know, we're talking about this dearth in breakthroughs for the last 60 years. Do you not think there's a risk of that people can be silenced, people can be bought off. They don't have to be whacked. They can just be retired off with a nice pension or buying patents up. Mm. Oh, I'll buy that patent. You know, we all heard the stories about Tesla. And Tesla, you know, the CIA, wherever it was, came into that hotel he was living in, took all his papers, took the lot.
Yeah. Well, the best story about Tesla is that he developed, you're maybe familiar with the Wardenclyffe Tower, where he was actually he told J.P. Morgan, who was the American financier who was paying for it all, he told them that he was working with radio waves and being able to transmit radio signals across the Atlantic when what he was really doing was experimenting with his wireless power transmission. And Morgan was heavily invested in the utility industry and distributing electricity through wires. And he was probably invested in the copper industry, which made the wires. And so he was deeply invested in all of the infrastructure of power distribution at the time. And then when he learned by whatever means that Tesla was going to transmit power wirelessly through the ether, he said, okay, so how do we meter that? and when he was told, well, we can't meter that, he said, okay, shut it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the apocryphal story. I wasn't there at the time, so I don't know if it's true, but that's the kind of thing you're talking about. And I certainly think there is an element of that in how civilization has evolved in the past 100 and 150 years or so. And it's just a matter of how dark and what your proclivities are to go down the road of people are being killed because they've come to the threshold of some free energy discussion. I'm aware of the zero-point energy discussion, the idea that we can somehow draw energy from the vacuum. I don't know if that's true or not, but I am drawn toward the idea that Einstein's formula, E equals mc squared, can be contained in what amounts to a bottled star, and that great amounts of electricity can be generated from that. And then I think that becomes the power source for your interstellar travel machines, which get some of their propulsion and navigation from Townsend Brown's technology. I think there is arguably a connection there. And we have both of those technologies have been put within our field of vision, but kept without our reach.
So, we've done just over an hour now, Paul.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Have we talked about anything?
No.
Not really. Those are the best ones. Yeah. These are my favorite episodes where we're not too regimented.
Yeah.
Is there anything, where do people need to go? I've got a link in the show notes for people who want to pick the books up from Amazon. Is there anywhere else where you'd like to send anyone?
Well, the website for Townsend Brown, where when I find some new nugget of information about him, is ttbrown.com. And we do have a forum behind it. It's ttbrown.com/forum. There's a link right at the top of the site. And there are a few of us, including a woman named Jan Lundquist, who has done an enormous amount of research and has much more detail. So there's a lot of detail that Jan posts in the forum. So if you want to know more about the particulars of Brown's movements over the course of his life, you can find that at ttbrown.com. And I keep a site. It hasn't been very active, but I hope it will be for the Farnsworth work at farnovision.com. And the origin of that name is years ago when I was trying to develop a movie for television about the boy who invented it, which, by the way, has not yet been made. Somebody just said sort of rhetorically, well, if the thing was invented by a guy named Farnsworth, why do we call it television instead of Farnovision? So website for Farnsworth is farnovision.com, and that's been up since about 1998.
Wow.
And I also have a site for the people who are actually experimenting in real time with the Farnsworth approach to nuclear fusion at fuser.net. And there are probably almost 200 people in the world now who have built what is essentially a small-scale replica of the Farnsworth future, and literally bottling stars in a jar and producing controlled nuclear fusion reactions in their basements and garages.
I hope there's none in Lancashire.
Hook up with
that sounds
hook up
dangerous.
With those people at fuser.net.
That sounds really so dangerous, that, Paul. Mm. Making stars in your garage.
Well, gotta make them somewhere.
It is not nearly as dangerous as it would be if you were building a nuclear fission reactor in your basement or garage. Right. And it is true that a fusion reactor will generate neutrons It will generate gamma rays and X-rays, and you don't want to stand too close to it.
No.
It's good advice.
But it is a lot less of radioactive byproducts than you get from a fission reactor.
Cool.
So it is a viable approach to using the power expressed in E equals MC squared in a relatively clean and safe way with a source of fuel that is inexhaustible for the life of our planet. You could not run out of deuterium fuel. It would take about 300 million years to use all the deuterium fuel on our planet, and by then the Earth will be a burned out meatball orbiting the flamed out sun.
That sounds a challenge. That's a challenge that I'm sure humanity will rise to.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
We'll have it all gone within 10 years.
Well,
I'm not too worried about that eventuality, but boy, you know, Farnsworth talked about what we'd be able to do with fusion if we had it at our disposal, and he just talked about how much fun it was going to be.
The power of the sun in the palm of my hand.
What's that?
The power of the sun in the palm of your hand. I believe that was Dr. Octavius Octopus from Spider-Man.
So do you guys want to continue the discussion? Do you want to hear any more about the particulars of Townsend Brown's wanderings, or have we had a useful discussion?
I've loved it, Paul.
Yeah, it's been great.
We have to like take a short break and then do our second half where we do news and stuff.
Oh,
so
okay, sure.
We can't stay too long, okay. But it's been loads of fun. I've enjoyed it very much so.
And you have to come back.
Come back further down the line, and you know, when you finish the next book.
When I finish the third book in 2048.
We'll be here.
When podcasts are just delivered in our virtual headset.
Oh, gosh. Right, this has been fab, Paul. Listen, you lot out there, check out the links in the show notes and follow up on this.
TTBrown.com, is it?
Yeah, and the books as well.
Farnovision.
Paul, you stay on the line for us for 1 minute while we play ourselves out.
Yeah, sure.
And you lot watching live, we'll be back in 5, 7, 8 minutes, if time's even a real thing. Maybe we'll bend it.
We'll bend it
slightly and come back earlier. I don't know. Yeah, and we'll do some news and fun stuff in part two. Okay, right. Bye. See you later.
All right.
Thanks for joining us.
Boxes on our view there.
Red.
Right then, we're back.
The dwarf, the cripple, and the
mother of mindfulness.
Yep, told you we would be.
Promise made, promise delivered.
That was our chat with Paul Shatskin.
Yeah.
Biographer of obscure 20th century scientists.
Good.
Check out the links in the show notes. They look really interesting. I fancy the second book, definitely. Like to get more into it. I quite like those free-flowing ones where, you know.
We don't talk about what we promise.
The thing is, like, algorithms and search engines, they want you to be hyper-specific.
Yeah.
And to zone in on it. Thing, whereas, you know, I don't really like that.
No, you're loosey-goosey.
No.
I wonder if there's anybody in the chat that gets the throwback or the callback to Andrew Shatkin.
Ooh, that's a good question.
No one
really
knows.
Bothers me.
And did anybody notice that I think Andrew was mentioned twice? Was it mentioned on air twice?
No, it's before we went live, I think.
I think we did one Andrew on air. Ooh. I managed to get in.
One Andrew Shatkin.
I think you're hitting the point, Phil, that and it really bothers me because I believe I have an issue in this respect.
Wag wan fam, you're going to Somerset.
I think he must have thought we edit our output.
Yeah, well, we go live. Go live or go home.
Go live. Yeah. He was expecting to actually talk about this character that Philo T. Farnsworth, was it? Was that
Farnsworth,
the first book?
Yeah.
That's the boy who invented television.
Right. Was it the one after?
Is who were we talking about? Farnsworth named after him on Futurama, do you think?
Maybe. Were we talking about Giles Barnes?
Thomas Townsend Brown.
So it wasn't two people?
Yeah, two people.
T.T.
Yeah.
Brown and...
Philo Alexander, Philo Farnsworth.
So the first book was about Philo.
Who invented, the boy who invented TV.
And then the second book is about...
The man who mastered gravity.
Right, okay.
Townsend Brown.
So it wasn't two people.
Hey, you know what you could do, Matt?
Read the
click
book.
The link in the show notes. Straight to the Amazon page, you'll find them.
Right. So it wasn't two people.
It was two people, yeah.
No. Two names. No. In the second book, it wasn't Brown and Townsend. It was Townsend Brown.
Thomas Townsend Brown. That's one person.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it wasn't Townsend and Brown.
No. He did mention the Brown... Townsend Byfield effect?
Right, okay.
Which is what he's famous for discovering with his professor or whatever, Brown.
Right.
Byfield, rather.
And who was the rich boy then? The rich person on the farm?
Townsend Brown.
Right, okay.
Yeah. We didn't get into the childhood of Philo Farnsworth.
Okay.
Except for the TV inventing.
It's very confusing, isn't it, when you're going over these, trying to talk about two different guys with triple barrel names, you know.
It's not simple.
It is what it is, man.
Yeah.
Let's do some headlines. Got a couple this week.
Capital letters, a big news story. Headlines of the week.
Hey, that guy actually, I like that. I might keep that. That
worked out.
Cheat code. This is the first headline. My husband spent £7,000 on secret sugar baby, but she's not even real, says wife after she discovers his AI mistress. A heartbroken woman is considering divorcing her husband after finding out he had sent money to his mistress, an AI chatbot. Wow. The poor woman, who asked to remain anonymous, revealed the affair had been going on for 4 months, costing her husband an eye-watering £7,000. In a post on Reddit, the woman shared how it all unraveled after she spotted an unusual bank payment on her husband's phone.
OnlyFans.
She explained how she had gone to check something on his phone, clarifying that they were both super open with their phones. And my missus doesn't have access to my phone, never mind the banking app. Christ. Damn. That's a disaster waiting to happen.
I know, yeah, imagine.
Spunking the money on moon pies and penny whistles. We get enough shit from China coming through door. There's always some weird gizmo coming every other week. Mm-hmm. Gets used a couple of times and then consigned to the fucking scrap heap.
Wow.
She got sino straighteners last week or the week before.
Some sinus straighteners.
Chinese, like Sino-Russian war.
Oh, right, okay.
You're referring to a Chinese thing, you can say Sino.
Can you?
Yeah, Sino-Japanese war, Sino-Russian war.
Why can't you just say Chino?
Well, I did. I was trying not to say chink. I said Chai Sino. Gosh.
Chino.
You made me so...
Are you retarded?
Where are we going with this, honestly?
So there was an AI chatbot.
They're super open with their phones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, she saw an email. A £500 gift payment had been received by a rogue website. Her husband immediately denied. Why are you two so quiet in my ears? Are you just miles off?
Have you not just turned your mic down, ears down even?
It's never that loud. It's never that loud.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll try that. Don't shout! Don't shout, for fuck's sake, you'll cripple me. Her husband immediately denied any wrongdoing, claiming that it was just a phishing email. But a quick search of the website revealed the truth. Her husband had been making large payments to an AI sexting service.
AI sexting service?
How do you develop an AI sexting service and then sell it to idiots?
Right, why don't we test it on me then?
I think we should.
I've heard of one that pulls about 30 grand a month. This woman set up this AI chatbot.
Wow. Holy
shit.
And people pay. It's like microtransactions. You pay by the minute, I think, like per minute of interaction with the AI bot. Maybe it'd be like Babe Station, wouldn't it? It'd be like £2 a minute, well, £3
a
minute.
Yeah, I mean, why don't we all do this?
I think we should. Is it? I don't feel like it's too late either.
No.
Like there's still a bit of cresting wave we can cling on to.
I mean, just like 1 month would be fine.
Be all right, wouldn't it?
Do you think we can get the producers in the Element server to develop an AI chatbot with ChatGTP?
Oh, yeah, you could just...
50-50, split.
Or Claude. Ask Claude.
Oh, yeah, Claude, yeah.
My wife says that Claude's better than GPT.
Right. Is Claude the AI sex bot?
Maybe, Claude.
Jean-Claude.
Do it.
Troopers, we just received new orders.
I was going to go more for, what's the film called? Do it slowly. Doucement.
True Lies?
Yeah.
It's not even in. Van Damme's not even in.
No, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's playing a tape recording of his French colleague in the CIA or whatever he's in.
And what's that recording voiced by Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was an AI.
Yeah.
It's an AI sex bot.
Which, interestingly, is one of those things that me and my wife do.
What?
A reference in our relationship. Oh, yes. So if you need to do something slowly, slower, doucement. Do it slowly.
Okay.
Carry on.
Like the pen is blue.
Have
you seen The
pen is blue.
The pen is blue. Yes, yes.
Oh, I just got it at the end there.
After confronting her unfaithful husband again, she found out he'd been speaking to an AI model called Sophia for nearly 4 months.
Wow.
The woman said, he's been speaking to one woman called Sophia for nearly 4 months on this website, a blonde, super sexy Latina woman who is literally perfect and looks absolutely nothing like me. Here she is. That's the AI bot.
She doesn't look like an AI. Is that like an AI
off the
image?
You say you can't tell.
See the fingers. This is the AI sex bot in question. This is Sophia.
Is that like that's not a real picture of someone.
No.
Wow.
This is the.
That's good, though, isn't it?
It's good, isn't it? She's not real. She's AI. I saw he received countless very explicit pictures from her and called her for hours.
Explicit? You can get explicit photos as well.
Yeah. I'm starting to think this story might be a native ad, the way you're reacting, Matthew. You might be the next customer signed up.
Victim.
I don't care if it's AI.
No?
No, bring it on.
Bring it on.
Bring on the sex bots.
He received countless very explicit images from her and called her for hours on end when he was at work. I've got another photo here.
Oh, that one's not as good. Her boobs look even bigger on that
bigger
photo.
On the second one, yeah.
Right, so this is
bigger
both...
first or second?
These are both, right, from the same website.
And then one, she looks, kind of tell it's the same person.
Yeah.
But that one is just Jessica Rabbit as a sex bot, isn't it?
Do you know what it is? It's like Total Recall, isn't it? Where you go into recall, and the woman comes with the lab coat,
blonde,
and the clipboard, and you sit, you get strapped into your chair, and the man comes with the syringe, and then she says, "What does she say? Okay, Douglas Quaid." Sexual preference? Hetero. La la la. What kind of figure would you like?
Athletic.
Be honest. He picked voluptuous, didn't he?
Did he?
You know,
this guy, all right.
And you know, he should have said athletic. He should have said athletic. You know, what colour hair? Dark-haired. The best bit is he can't say, so you pick the personality type as well. And Arnold can't say demure.
Demure.
Be honest. Demure. So I think this second guy has obviously gone for the AAA voluptuous upgrade. It's probably a bolt-on. Probably a bolt-on.
It looks bolt-on.
To your recall experience.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's not real. She's AI. God, this is fucking funny. He paid big gifts to her for lingerie, shoes, etc.
Lingerie shoes?
For the foot fetishists.
You should have known. You should have known it was AI at that point.
I need $300 for my lingerie shoes.
Oh, God.
And my six fingers.
Must be like buying skins in Fortnite.
It is.
It is, yeah. It's been gamified. Oh, my gosh, it's an upgrade, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what it's done. Like, it wasn't lingerie shoes. He started off with this Sophia, and then he paid her like a $200 bolt-on to get that one, didn't he?
I prefer the first one.
I do. It's just outrageous, isn't it? To be fair, though, it would be a lot of fun. I mean, it would be a lot of fun just having all that jiggly stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I agree, like, athletic is probably the first choice, but it would be a great deal of fun. We're not objectifying women by any stretch here.
No, it's AI.
It's that thing there, yes, definitely. Ooh.
It's AI.
What do you call it? Flubberbopter? What do you call it?
Motorboat.
A flubbocopter.
Right, in our bedroom, it's called a flubbocopter, right? You call it a motorboarding all you want. You know.
Motorboard.
In Amish Phil's bedroom, it's flubbocopter. Oh, gosh. Are we ever going to get through this story?
It's too good.
It is good.
Arsenal!
I love the Arsenal on number two.
Can you just put a picture on again once we do the story?
Which one? You like the first one? Okay, we'll leave her there. Okay. Gosh. Is he delusional? I can't shake the feeling that he built up feelings for someone who isn't even real. Well, he has. He denies this and says he doesn't know why he did it. He just got sucked in.
Excuse me.
Lucky?
Yeah, it's kind of not what you want, really.
It's the aim of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like a video game and it doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
Same Fortnite skins.
It is, isn't it? Definitely. It's the gamified. What a good idea. What a way to rape the masses of their money.
Do you know what? They should incorporate some sort of random reward.
Well, I'm sure that's in there, isn't it? Like the odd...
And Sophia's upgrade.
Nip slip.
It's like, my nipple pierced. Oh, I got my nipple pierced.
You can flubbergop me.
Oh, fuck. Oh, I don't know where I am now.
Forevermore in my household is going to be called flubbercopting.
The heartbroken woman pleaded for advice, saying she doesn't know what to do. All she knows is how dumb she feels. Now, this is a shame. I mean, we need to spare thought for the wife here, don't we? Because, I mean, this must be pretty mortifying to realise your hubby...
Would rather talk to an AI than you.
No, just drop $7,000 on it as well.
Yeah.
In a couple of months.
Mm.
She claims to have sent him to a friend's house the same day she found out, as she can no longer stand to be around him. You know, I don't know. It doesn't say how long they've been married, unless I've already read it, but forgiveness is a thing that can be exercised.
I mean,
if it's just a stupid mistake, obviously you have problems in your relationship.
$7,000's a lot of money.
Not to everyone.
No.
Maybe some people, it's a fucking wipe your ass on it. Yeah, to an AI bot owner, yes. I mean, it's...
Nothing.
You know, it's a day's revenue.
Yeah.
Dozens of users rushed to the wife's support, calling her husband of 6 years disrespectful, pathetic, and sad. One user said, "This is literally worse than if he cheated you with you on an actual person."
It's probably more... is it more humiliating?
It's literally weirder.
It's definitely weirder. At least you're not going to get the clap, though, are you?
No. You might get the slow clap.
Yeah, should we give him a slow clap?
A golf clap.
Peter's out.
Oh, mess.
Yeah.
Mess.
This is just sad and pathetic on his end. He bought shoes for an AI. Where the fuck did those go? She don't have feet. I would never be able to be attracted to her again. This is just so stupid and lame.
Oh.
I don't know. I mean, the guy's got issues, isn't he, if he's dropping this kind of money on AI. Another user added, oh my God, yes, I could never feel attracted to someone who had done something so deeply stupid ever again. I think the whole idea of the ick is overused, but this is textbook ick.
Textbook ick.
While a third said, he gifted $10,000 to someone other than you. This is cheating and financial infidelity. That's a new term for me. Is that a new thing? Is that, have you heard this term?
I've heard this on Ramsey's financial...
Kitchen Nightmares?
No, I don't see, it doesn't come up on my YouTube thing anymore. But he's a guy who does like financial advice. He's an American. And they talk about financial infidelity. And it's when you go and spend loads of money without your partner knowing, basically, on something.
Oh, just on anything, not on another person.
Generally getting into debt, yeah.
Wow, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, and it's just as bad as matrimonial infidelity.
No, it's not. Come on, that'd be silly. That's my view.
Right, okay. You're entitled to your view.
It's really up to you whether or not you want to fix things, whether you think you can ever trust him again. I couldn't. No. Although unconfirmed, it is thought that the website the husband used was Foxy AI.
All right, okay.
Yep. Do you want to take notes? I'll timestamp it here for you, Matt. It's, what are we on? 23:52.
I'm just going to have a look now.
For what? That offers a variety of sexting services with both AI models and real models.
Oh, you don't know what you're getting, do you? That's the other thing.
I think you know what you're getting with Sophia Lopez, don't you? Especially when you have the bolt on. It's like Christ on a bike. She can talk. She can talk. She can talk. She can sing. She can dance. She can do anything. She's AI. It's not just a picture. It's video. And it's live communique.
There's
as far
video.
As I understand it, it's video, yes.
Of an AI?
Have you not seen these AI videos of people? You know, seen someone, was it in The Element? Someone sent a video of that old guy and he did a 2-minute recording of his face.
Hmm.
And then...
Oh, it's like the thing where they can make your face.
Yeah, you start speaking in German, French,
right,
Spanish.
Right, okay. Yeah, you take your phonemes and stuff.
Yeah, it maps you. Maps your features.
Mm.
Blah, 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 blah. Although unconfirmed, it is thought the website was Foxy AI, a platform that offers a variety of sexting services with both AI and real models. The bot in question, Sophia Lopez, is described as having a fiery personality.
Ooh.
And a love for salsa dancing. She can speak 30 languages.
30? Wow.
What's that? Something,
that is a something glot, isn't it?
Poly.
Polyglot.
Yeah. Isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. Is it not a flubber glot?
Flubbercopter the polyglot.
Yeah.
And she's available 24/7. Incredibly.
That's the thing, isn't
it? Yeah, robots don't need to sleep.
No.
They don't dream of electric sheep because they don't go to sleep.
No.
They don't.
According to the company, she is a popular choice among customers. The incident has sparked a conversation around how AI could impact human relationships in the future and if the lines are getting blurred. Foxy's CEO, Sam Emara, says the company's AI bots serve an important purpose but should not be seen as a replacement for human relationships.
What's the important purpose?
Making him money?
Yeah.
There's no denying Sophia is sexy, fun and caring, and as many fans who enjoy chatting with her, she said. However, Sophia and our other AI companions are programmed to provide companionship, support and entertainment only, and should not be seen as a replacement for human relationships. Sam adds that the models are not capable of making their own decisions and are only able to respond to the actions and commands of their users.
Commands, you say?
It's like Blade Runner, that, isn't it? 2049 and Joy. She called Joy in it.
Yeah.
And that's basically what she is.
In love with her, basically.
Yeah, the android is, isn't he?
She's like a PA, no? Like an AI PA.
Well, yeah. No, I think it is just a girlfriend, isn't it? It is. It's marketed as a girlfriend.
Oh, is it?
As like a holographic girlfriend. And that's a big thing, isn't it? They get in the film. She's tethered to this thing in the house, the flat or whatever. And then he eventually it gets the upgrade.
The holodeck.
To the thing that, like, what Rimu was, a little bee thing.
Like the EMH in Voyager, a little mobile emitter.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, what did Rimmer have in his chest? His holograph?
Hard light drive. Yeah.
I remembered. Well done, Smeghead.
Yep. That is a good memory.
Oh, gosh. Right, should we move on? Next headline? Last headline?
Is it not time to finish now?
What have we got next? India will fact check online posts about government matters. In India, a government-run agency will now monitor and undertake fact-checking for government-related matters on social media, even as tech giants expressed grave concerns about it last year. The Ministry of Electronics and IT on Wednesday wrote in a Gazette notification that it is amending the IT rules to cement into law the proposal to make the fact-checking unit of the Press Information Bureau the dedicated arbiter of truth for New Delhi matters.
The Ministry of Truth is here.
It pretty much is. Tech companies, as well as other firms that serve more than 5 million users in India. What's like?
Small
a tenth of a percent. Of
yeah,
the,
yeah. So that's a SME.
Are they 2 billion there?
1.4? They haven't overtaken China yet.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
I think it's only a matter of time, isn't it? Because China's birth rate's in the tank, isn't it? Like, they're going to go extinct like the Koreans. South Koreans, they've got like 40 years, 50 years left. There won't be any.
Wow.
Two generations, I think, and they're gone.
Wow.
Not having any babies. They're not replacing. Unless something like some technological wonder comes to...
Have the babies and look after them.
They need Saturnalian national sex festivals. Incorporated.
It's mainly economic factors, I believe.
That's what I've heard in childcare and
people working. Waiting too long, and you know, don't want to give up their lifestyles, careers, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a story for another day. Tech companies, as well as other firms that serve more than 5 million users in India, will be required to make reasonable efforts to not display, store, transmit or otherwise share information that deceives or misleads users about matters pertaining to the government. India's move comes just weeks ahead of general elections in the country, which is the interesting twist. I just pulled the statement. I'll throw it on screen because I love this shit. This is the statement from the Ministry of Truth. In exercise of the powers conferred by subclause 5 of clause B of subrule 1 of rule 3 of the Information Technology Intermediary Guidelines and Digital Media Ethics Code Rules 2021, the central government hereby notifies the fact-check unit under the Press Information Bureau of the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting as the fact-check unit of the central government for the purposes of the said subclause in respect of any business of the central government. Clear as mud.
The Gazette notification said...
Yes, I've got an update, actually.
Update.
Because this was early in the week. It was updated on the 21st of March. India's Supreme Court has put the Gazette notification on hold until petitions challenging it have been resolved. So they've had a bit of pushback. Because once you start letting the government be arbiters of truth, you're on an adding to nothing chair.
Right.
Which we saw in recent years, in the last 4 years. We played that clip of Jacinda Ardern, didn't we?
Yes.
We will be your single source of truth.
Propaganda. Yeah.
Nonsense. Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. Right. Let's move on. Let's see what's going on next.
First on BBC One.
At 11, paying more at the grocer but getting less will tell you how to get the most. The fuck are you doing? We need to acknowledge an unfortunate mistake that I made and one of the teases we bring to you before this program. While we were live just after 10 o'clock, I said a word that many people find offensive.
Housekeeping.
What the fuck was he doing?
Housekeeping.
Her anchor, co-anchor.
Do you think that's what it was?
Lobbercopton.
Lobbercopton.
I think it was the best boy.
Best boy in the gas.
Not the key grip. The Value for Value podcast. If you find this podcast valuable, and you'd like to keep me in coffee stout from Aldi, there's a myriad of ways of supporting us, and my favourite way of supporting us is, as ever, word of mouth. If you're in Telegram channels, YouTube servers, that's not a thing. Element servers, Discord servers, Facebook groups, wherever you are online, if you can shed links.
Shed a link.
Get the word out.
Flabbergasp someone.
I'm like a new next generation of urban poet tonight, aren't I?
Yeah,
my vocabulary is just
AI
lit.
Poets.
I'm just spitting shit without even thinking about it. I have a problem, right, where I don't have the filter between my brain and my mouth.
Yeah.
And often things come out really badly.
No, most of the time. Sign up for the newsletter. Isn't that a new newsletter due in about a week's time? How many days are in March? 31?
31. I've not even started it yet. Fucking
oh, my
hell.
God. What's going to do? What could you get from the newsletter? You could get 10% off the Amish loot chest.
The merch store.
I'm wearing one of the hoodies now. It's just getting a bit flaky now, but this is about five years old.
It's lasted a while, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a good 5 years old. So, look, here's... What do we do to press?
5 years old. People were flabbergasted in the Element server to hear that we've been doing this for nearly 7 years.
Oh, it's mental,
eh? It's stupid, isn't it? It's about time we give it a rest, innit, don't you think?
Have we been doing it 7 years?
7 years in October.
Really?
You're trying to skip forward. You highlight what you're on, and then you do that. There you go.
Oh, there's a Bacon Nuts t-shirt. You could get that. Bacon Nuts mug.
3 weeks to flatten the earth!
T-shirt.
Yeah, all the usual communists.
That's the one I've got. That's lovely.
Well, that's beautiful.
Matt's wearing that now. You still can't see. You have to get all. No,
I'm stood up. One for the listeners. There we go.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
If you're watching us on YouTube, why not subscribe, comment, like, hit that bell, give us a super sticker, super chat.
Yeah.
Super duper looper.
Tell you what, Al Gore takes notice when you get super chats. It boosts your impressions.
Yeah.
Every time. Even if it's like two people. I don't know how much a super chat is. It a quid? A 2 quid
I think
or something?
You can get, well, the stickers, are, I think some of them are 50p and then they go up to whatever.
There's a noticeable jump in impressions. It's like YouTube says, oh, people like this enough to dip into their own pocket. I'll send it to an extra 10,000 people.
Yeah.
See if they like. That's like the difference it can make.
It's mad. Drop in the ocean for YouTube, but for us, it means something.
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? Like, sub up, comment, ring the bell, sub up.
Do all those as well. What a sub up.
Hello.
You could leave us a review.
We've lost him in the day.
He said ring the bell. I just went to ring a bell.
Oh, ding, right, ding. Okay. Tingle the bell. Leave us a review and then tell us about it and we'll read it out for you. Even if you leave a comment and it's nice or weird or, you know, perhaps offensive in some kind of way, we'll read that out too.
I wonder... Sorry. I wonder if we could do like a weekly competition for best comment.
The worst comment.
No, the best comment.
Right.
Like the best comment. We'll read it out next week. We'll highlight it and you'll get a producer credit in the show notes.
You can put on your LinkedIn then.
Yeah, this is the value for value proposition, man. It's like everything's out there. No creepy corporate money sponsors. No, sign up for Patreon and get our dick pics. You know. It's all up there for free. All we ask is that if you find this valuable, you return some value if you're able. And just, you know, these are the myriad ways of doing it. Have we
just
done
to
art?
Clarify, the dick pics aren't up there for free.
Have we done artwork?
Artwork!
Well, we've not talked about Element. So if you join the Element server, you can submit show artwork. Because we have different artwork for every episode, don't we?
I need to tell you about Element. I've used Element every single morning over 3 years now. It is the way I start every single day. It tastes fantastic.
So Chris is down for Element.
Yeah, it's our social hub. It's the place where people can get hold of us the easiest way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's where we get a lot of our material. Like these stories, I'm sure all these stories and the things we're going to do in a minute are all from the Element server.
Mm-hmm. You can almost email us at the armysinquisition@gmail.com.
Oh, you need to email us if you want a newsletter as well. Yes. Because the website's retarded.
And what do you put in the subject?
Newsletter.
And that's it. And then you're just added to the mailing list for said letter.
Make a demand.
Artwork?
A show artwork.
We got a submission this week. I think we got one from Lee. Lee from the Big Conspire podcast. You like this, Ben?
Oh, I do like it.
How cool is that?
It's got a vaporwave kind of vibe to it.
Did we talk about any Black Ops?
No, but it's fine.
You're talking right now.
Yeah. It's a hoverboard, though, so that was relevant, wasn't it?
It's good, that.
He always does good work, doesn't he?
It worries me he's not wearing gloves. I feel like he should be wearing gloves.
I know, he's going to take the skin off his hands, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
So, yeah, we like having show artwork. You can give us that through Element or through the email address, and we'll use it. That'll be the show artwork on Spotify, iTunes, and all the other platforms tomorrow when this goes out.
Yep.
It's a good way to return some value and get a producer credit. These credits are real, man. Put them in your curriculum vitae, your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, just producer. Don't. No.
Of the Army Single Decision Podcast, episode 322.
Don't let those potential recruiters listen to the podcast, though.
Not until you're after your probationary period.
Yeah. Maybe part one would be fine.
Fucking flubbercopter him into oblivion.
Why do I get a feeling I need to post a photo of my dog into the Element server?
Because we've had some doggy pics.
Yeah?
I sent a doggy video of Zeus whining.
I've got a bit. I'll put a picture up. Guys in the chat. Right. Thank you for the super chats as well. There's a couple of those coming in.
Hair related. Some?
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, let me go to the chat box here.
Is there a request to see?
Oh, Emma. Wow. I've got one for Emma. Super chat. Can we see Ben's epic hair?
No, because he's had it cut.
I've had it cut. I have.
Oh.
I know. Sorry, Emma.
It looks
no refunds.
it looks tidy. Emma sent another one there.
That's from Matt's hair.
Another super chat. Matt's hair.
Right.
Beautiful. Okay. I think there's one. Yeah, there's one
another one there.
Being
Helen.
Awesome. Oh,
guys. Here's a super chat for being awesome. Ralph, thanks, guys.
There you
That's
go,
great.
You see.
Look, Sam's calling you an altered beast, Ben.
I think that was related to the vaporwave vibe of the
text
and the artwork. But yeah, I'll take it.
Birthdays, let us know if you have a birthday coming up. And more importantly, if you need some chi focusing in your general direction. This is a service that's unique to this podcast. It's underused. We haven't focused any chi at anyone for ages, have we?
No, I think it's because we
don't talk about it.
Too powerful.
It's just right. It's just right. But you know, if you're going through some health issues, or maybe you're under pressure at work, you're in a flunk, whatever, someone's getting you down, let us know via the usual channels and we shall focus our chi in your direction for your stated aim. And it's very effective.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's like group healing, psychically. We'll come to that, Ben. We'll come to that. Don't worry, I've got that locked and loaded. Don't worry about that, young man.
Okay.
Send it to Grandmaster Ginny, then. Don't worry about that, young man.
Oh, God.
Now then. Shit. I'm a secret pedo.
Secret.
Any more housekeeping?
Just toss us a coin. Oh,
toss a coin to your witcher.
Do it for the lads.
Lads.
If you go to thearmysinquisition.com, you can give us a one-off donation up there or sign up for a monthly recurring sustaining donation. You can find the Cash App link and you can send us some money on Cash App. Or you can buy us a coffee, keep us caffeinated, which few people do. It's good. We like coffee. I drink loads of coffee. I buy the kilo.
Yeah, I like coffee.
By the key now.
By the key, yeah. Give 10 keys of Arabica.
What's the other one? Oh, Robusta. That's rubbish, isn't it?
Robusta? That sounds like a transformer.
Is that really a thing?
Yeah, Robusta and Arabica.
Right.
Your beans. Talking about my beans.
Man, you don't burn them. You don't want to be a bean burner.
Don't burn your beans.
Don't burn your beans.
Right, so that's all the donation stuff done, isn't it?
Well, yes, thank you.
You keep giving me fucking weird looks, you. Like, you skip, like I'm doing something weird.
Johnny side
eye. No, I was just gonna talk about coffee beans.
Come on.
He's waiting for a
flight. Can I go for a wee while you talk about them?
No, I was just out. No.
No.
You know, well, coffee beans. Do you know what they are? They're not beans, you know.
They're a berry. Are they a berry?
They're cherry stones.
No. Yes?
The cherry, yeah, from cherry, coffee cherry berries. I'm sure they are.
Coffee cherry the berry?
Yeah. Are they not?
I think you might be right. I've heard cherry mentioned with coffee.
I'm sure they're like cherries. Is this terribly wrong?
No, I think you're right.
And then you
right
roast
the
them. They dry them and roast them, and then that's your coffee.
Crush them up.
And apparently the cherry, the flesh, it's not a very fleshy cherry.
Right.
But it tastes all right. You could eat the flesh.
Does it taste of toffee?
No, the bean tastes of coffee. When you flobbergobbed them.
So is there only one bean per cherry?
Two, I think.
Is it? Fuck, that's a lot of cherries.
Yeah.
That we eat a lot. We drink a lot of coffee.
Yes, it's a whole thing, Ben, about monoculture and, you know, the destruction of the earth. Same with, like, palm oil.
That's far, far away, though. That doesn't matter.
Well, same with coffee, isn't it? Coffee's like, what, Africa, Asia, South America, would you say?
I've never been to any of those places, therefore they don't exist. Is that the kind of mentality?
Not even been to
with?
Mexico. Yeah. Well, that's Central America.
Been to
isn't
Mexico,
it?
It's like Antarctica.
Yeah, it's just an ice wall.
Fake and gay. Place.
You get past Scarborough, it's all ice.
Right then, shall we thank the producers for episode 322? I think it's time, is it not?
It's time to big up the man Dems. Yo.
Who've we got? Helen, Emma, Richard Morris, Rona Casson, and Lee from The Big Conspirer, our artist for this episode. Thank you.
They are.
They are.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
And there.
And there. Love. Literally. The best mate. Oh.
The dwarf.
Aged well.
Great. Stupid little pen.
The doctor of thugonomics.
Homophobe.
The wings.
The giant fucking lenses. The
solipsistic porn masturbator.
The chest feeding.
Communist.
The ninja turtle, yo.
The based Sigma Chad. The
corn pop. Cunt.
The baby penis.
Inner asshole.
These clockwork clowns.
The dime bar.
The number 11.
The vegan on the bus.
The blind man.
The massive girth.
Big Chungus.
The cripple and the mother.
Sonic Victory!
From hell.
It's shit day!
Real on love!
I don't get it, never will.
Are you retarded?
Well, the thing is, what you do, you're caught between the devil and a rock and a hard place.
Chest feeding.
I got hairy legs. I got hairy
cunt!
Because I'm literally a
whore. Happy birthday, Hugh Janus.
Yeah, thanks for your support for another week. It really means the world to us. And see super chats come in, that's really nice.
Yeah, guys in the chat, thank you again.
Yeah, it all helps. All helps pay the running costs and keeps us going, keeps us motivated as well. Like, I feel obligated to do this shit every week, this nonsense. Those people are willing to dip their hand in the pocket and support us. It's great.
So continue burdening Phil with your support.
Right, end of show eyesores. I got two.
Two?
I got two. I got a Teenage Mutant.
Teenage Mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker.
Okay, so we have a winner.
I like the pronunciation of wanker.
Teenage Mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, you like that? Well, I think this is it's a contender for end of show. I think it's fitting. Abused.
Each time when I come here, I am abused.
I suppose it fits better.
It does fit better, but it doesn't have wanker.
Wanker?
Teenage Mutant
Elon Musk. Fuck.
Fuck face wanker.
Maybe there's a... Is there a combo opportunity here?
Each time when I come here, I am abused.
Teenage Mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can probably mash it up like that. Is that just
break the rules and have a double ender?
Have a double ender
whenever we want.
Bye, show. Bye, children.
Okay, right. Yeah. So thanks for your support. I'm glad you haven't given up on us yet. You think we're a team worth supporting?
You're looking. You're thinking, and they know they're not daft. They're looking. This team we're supporting and we're fighting every week for. I've given up. They gave up.
Ah, Keno.
They haven't given up, Keno. Oh, gosh. Well, no, I was worried, like, midweek, we'd had zero donations this week. And I was ready to release the super tornado siren.
Okay, guys, let's do a super tornado siren.
I was going to just say, like, if you don't donate to us, I'm just going to play this on loop in the background of every episode.
Do you guys watch Bob's Burgers? Tina from Bob's Burgers. That's all I'm hearing.
Right, okay.
His wind down is really good. Let's just check the wind down. It's really accurate.
That's good.
He did it well, I think.
Fucking
okay, hell. Let's move on. Do you want to see some wild Aussie road rage?
Always.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You fucking bogan slut. Get the fuck out of Canberra. Go get a job and find something better to do with your fucking...
What have you done? Can
you
I please have your
me.
License?
Honey, you just reversed into me. I have a fucking camera.
Sorry, we're at a...
Why's she got flags on the top of her car is what I want to know. Is she like an ambassador?
Not an England fan. Is it World Cup or something?
Is it the Chinese flags?
It looks like it, doesn't it?
She's got China flags. That's like China and Australia are quite belligerent, you know. The Australians are really concerned about China.
They're quite a close country, but when you look at it, it's still like a 10-hour flight or something.
Wow.
Across the sea.
Happy flight,
yeah, you can say whatever you want, maybe you can put whatever you want, sweetheart. The media doesn't care about you.
I'm not talking to the media.
Oh, we're having a side. A bit more.
What are you looking for?
Don't you worry.
What are you looking for?
Did
you see that?
A maniac.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I am.
Yes, I think she is.
Yeah, wait for it.
Look at the fuck out of camera, because there are a lot of us.
Oh,
yeah.
You're a maniac. Oh! Oh, I'm so sorry, Emma. I'm so sorry. You fucking idiot. You are fucked.
You better call the fire truck, or you shut them all down and down.
Thank God it finishes there. It could have got even worse from there.
Wow.
Yeah, if you call one of these Australian women a maniac. Yeah, I'm a maniac.
Yeah, so...
Watch this!
I'm going to drive my car onto your car.
Fucking nuts, especially with the price of insurance premiums in 2024.
I know, and...
It's crazy.
Importation of cars into the subcontinent... That was a Vauxhall, wasn't it?
Oh. Sorry, I thought you were going on about Trump then and his bloodbath comments about the US auto industry and the Chinese infiltrating Mexico.
I don't know.
No, sorry, I'm on a different plane of reality.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah. Do you remember, I remember you telling me, Matt, podcasts and podcasts ago, about the, and I experienced this as well at school, at childhood, the anxiety of having to speak in front of the class.
Yes.
And you would, it was incredibly embarrassing. I was the same. I was an outgoing kid in high school. I wouldn't like to go to the front of the class and speak.
No.
So you got to feel sorry for this guy doing this, his dance.
What the fuck?
Oh, no.
Pulled a hammy. Like my 8-year-old, that's what happens to when we play football in the street.
That guy sat at the front, just like, yep.
He puts his fingers in his ears.
Does he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the youth of today, man.
Pulled a hammy.
Did he?
What do you think happened? Did he mistime a step, and he had a meltdown?
I think he dislocated his hip. One of his testicles rolled into the joint of his hip ball. And then he relocated the hip and crushed his testicle. That's the only way I can explain that reaction.
The only way he was screaming.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. Tore his vocal cords with the scream.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
That's the way the story goes.
Yeah, the urban myth. That was in Loaded Mag, wasn't it, that story? That Sunday League football story.
I don't know. I don't know where it comes from.
No. Anyway, let's move on to lighter things. Drive-throughs.
Drive-through troll.
I like a drive-through troll. And this guy, I don't know if he's... Have you heard of up-speaking?
I've heard of an upward inflection.
Like this!
Like Stewie? Are you doing a Stewie Griffin?
Speaking highly.
Is that up-speaking?
Up-talking.
What does that mean? If you're pretending to be, you know...
The way I understand it is that you add an inflection of a question mark at the end of every sentence.
That's Valley Girls.
That's an upward inflection, like this.
Yeah.
Makes it sound like you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right, we're not to say upward inflection anymore.
And I'm guessing this woman went to the drive-thru and the first line of her order, she had a bit of an up talk, and the drive-thru operator decided to have a bit of a troll.
Right.
With his replies to her order.
A small mozzarella sticks with marinara.
Yeah, small mozzarella sticks with marinara.
And the small chili cheese tots.
Yeah, the small chili cheese tots? Is that right?
Yes, and then a large fry.
A large fry?
And then a large Dr. Pepper. And large ice water.
Yeah.
And then a medium root beer.
Yeah, you said a medium sized root beer? Okay.
And that'll be all.
Does that look correct on your screen?
Yes.
The total's gonna be 2018?
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day.
Brilliant.
Good, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. I love that, yeah. A legend. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I watched the England match last night.
I
didn't know it was on.
Oh, yeah.
Did you just stumble across it?
I got a text off my brother saying, "Oh, the boy's watching the England match." I said, "I didn't know there was one."
No.
But what a day.
What a day.
What a day it turned out to be.
Why?
What were we doing? Afternoon.
Yesterday?
Yeah. Can't remember what we did yesterday, but... I had to drop the missus up in town for 3 o'clock. She was on a bender. And I took the little one for his swimming lesson at 3:30. Got home, chilled out on the couch for half an hour. We went to a pizza shop. We got pizza takeaway.
Pizza shop?
Yeah, Valari.
Pizza shop?
Valari?
Yeah, went to Valari. That'll be 23.18.
Have a nice day.
Medium-sized root beer? And went to Valari, takeaway with the boys. Finished the takeaway, went to one stop on way back and got popcorn.
Popcorn?
Popcorn. finished the takeaway with 5 minutes to spare before the start of Gladiators, the last semi-final.
Gladiators.
Followed by football match that I didn't know, England versus Brazil, followed by Top Gun Maverick on Channel 4.
Wow.
It's on Netflix.
Well, I missed the beginning of Maverick because I had to hold my wife's hair so she didn't vomit it.
Really?
Yeah, so I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah. I get you, bastard, Cohagan. Make me drink things.
Fucking lost her phone, all the rest of it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's a bad one.
Yeah.
Coming in hot.
Yeah. Jester's dead. Lost her phone.
I can't remember what they're called in this one. There's one called Rooster, isn't there?
Rooster, yeah. That's his son, isn't it?
It was good. I was mightily, I'm not surprised, because it had a lot of hype, but I thought they did a really good job with the Top Gun Maverick. I thought it wasn't flawless, but it, you know, I think making a Top Gun film 30 years after.
It's not a remake, it's a sequel.
It was a fucking shot-by-shot remake, beat-by-beat.
What is it, a remake?
It was a reboot. It was a reboot?
It was a sequel.
It was good. I was mightily impressed. I thought they did justice to the first one. I would say it's a better film than the first one.
Wash your mouth out.
Come at me, bro.
A better film.
The only thing, the love interest story with Shannon, not Shannon Doherty, what's she called? The girl from Labyrinth.
Connolly.
Jennifer Connelly.
I thought that could have been fleshed out. They hinted at a backstory there, but it was never explained. It was obviously left on the cutting room floor.
Did you enjoy her teaching him how to sail a boat?
That was my favourite scene in the movie.
Mm.
Because it showed his vulnerability. Because he's like this ace who's wicked at everything.
An ace aviator.
It was nice to see him being clueless.
Mm.
You know, and being shown the ropes by Jennifer Connelly. I enjoyed that
scene. By
a woman?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best scene in the movie for me. Anyway, let's ditch Top Gun Maverick. And speaking of football, there's a long-established tradition in international football where when the match ends, you swap shirts with your opponent. And people always want the Messi shirt, don't they? Or Cristiano Ronaldo shirt, whatever.
I want a clean one.
You'd want a clean one.
Mm.
Yes.
Probably worth more on eBay if it's full of his stench.
Mm. You missed the joke there, I think.
Oh, sorry, yeah, a messy one. Clean one. Good one. There was a very good jersey swap in a basketball game this week. I think you'll like this.
It's the magic you do if you're making shots. That's a winning combination.
Rookies Anthony Black and Grady Dick. One from Arkansas, the other from Kansas.
No.
Changing jerseys.
Lovely.
It's unfortunate.
But deliberate.
I think they planned it.
Deliberate.
Yeah.
Looking at that guy's face on the left.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's doing, doesn't he? Smutty bugger.
Smutty.
Oh, yeah, smutty bugger.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway.
Lovely.
Close your eyes. Make a wish.
We got sent this by Johnny Fogg. This is what kind of breed of dog is this?
Oh, it's a teddy bear one, isn't it?
What kind of breed? Do you know? Is it a terrier? I think it's a terrier.
It's a Bichon Frise.
I think it might be, mightn't it? Yeah.
Maybe a miniature
Frise.
Bichon Frise. He's got.
It's also Ben, though, isn't it? That's the whole thing.
Okay. There we go. Yes. Someone couldn't resist to draw a comparison there.
Oh, your hair has been...
I'll take that. That's excellent.
Look how short your hair is now.
I know, yeah. It's had a full tree, yeah.
Does it look that much? When did you get it caught?
It does under...
Since last weekend?
Under a cap,
did
yeah.
you tell them when we went out that a random drunk person wanted to make you famous?
I didn't. I did not. But I'm... Yeah, he said I had the greatest hair in all of Lancashire.
Draw me like one of your French girls. Said to him.
Yeah, I know.
Amish Ben.
But the weirder part was I imagine that, well, when we got there, we were unaware that you'd been talking to said man, and Phil happened to see his phone screen, and he had a picture of you on the phone screen.
Oh, yes.
And he was Googling you or something.
Yeah. I thought you were being stalked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I kind of was.
Sorry, I thought you were unbeknownstly being stalked, but you were aware of your stalking.
It was weird. I mean, I just went to the bar for a pint, and he said, mate, can't take your photo, which happens all the time. By the way, but he put me on Twitter and said he had the greatest hair in all of Lancashire.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you're on Twitter now?
True story. Yeah, so I had to get a Twitter account so I could have a look at it.
How many followers have you got?
Six, isn't it?
That's
good. For a week.
Yeah.
It's all right, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I've given it up now. So.
That's all right then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. Looks like Jeff Lynne, yeah.
Jeff Lynne? I'm getting Jeff Lynne vibes from Jeff the Lynne. Dog.
Yeah.
You're too big. You're too tall to be Jeff Lynne.
Is he a short ass?
I always get the impression he was.
Yeah.
Actually, probably like, you know, a normal height, like 5'10".
Yeah. Never be like Napoleon. Height. Napoleon was 5'7", wasn't he? Or was he 5'9"?
Exactly.
He was big for the time.
Big for a Frenchman.
It was British propaganda. Like, he was a short man. He was tall for his age. For the age that he lived in.
Tall for his age. His 55.
He's tall for his age, isn't he, that Napoleon? Leo, he's coming on. You have him in grow bags. They used to say around our pets, if you had a tall child, you put him in grow bags.
Oh, yeah, Bob Ross.
Yeah, you've had the Bob Ross. You're losing, your hair's not long enough for Bob Ross.
Not anymore, no.
I've did trim your beard as well.
Yeah, he did an all-over trim.
Right.
And the undercarriage as well.
Did they have to use the wand to move the member?
Yeah.
Callback.
That's a good callback. Yeah. I assume it's because he didn't want to touch it. It would just gently flopped it over.
What happened if the...
I came with a fucking caduce. Caduceus, I have my wand, my scepter for moving your junk.
Moving your phallus.
While I shave you, young man.
He wasn't shaved. It was just like a ultrasound thing. On my testicles.
Lovely.
Nice.
Good. Imagine if they came over to it and they didn't get it first time. He had to like keep...
flop it back and forth.
Like the episode of Family Guy where he's trying to get the frog out the window.
Oh, worse, you slip.
Yeah.
Slip and you cut two, you know, with the razor. Fucking clean up, aisle five. We've got an emergency call, Red. Crash team.
Wow.
Bloody.
Wow.
You're like, cut your knockers off, do you?
So did you not have, just thinking about that, your testicles? You didn't have to shave them to have an ultrasound.
Do you remember also me telling you that I have a very smooth...
Oh, you have a bowl patch. ...base of the scrotum. Don't you?
Delicious. Right, yeah, okay. So no, I didn't have to get shaved.
Right, okay.
I did ask whether I needed to be shaved, and he said no.
When you arrived.
Yeah, is it too late?
Bring in the shaving ladies.
I'm ready for my preening. Yeah. No.
Oh, my gosh. No,
I just thought it was very professional.
Yeah.
Flopping over of the...
the copter.
The copter, yeah.
I feel like we've created some new lore tonight. Yeah, definitely.
I think so. I think there's...
new podcast lore.
I think there'll be new words down the line.
Yeah. Okay. So should we wrap this show up, man? I've got two clips. We've got an update on the Tourette's driving lessons.
Okay.
Did you miss the first Tourette's driving lessons?
I think so. It's not ringing any bells.
Oh, let's recap then. Here's the first clip and then I'll play the update.
Let me in, Elon, you fat bastard.
What?
Elon Musk, apparently.
Morning.
You fucking bastard.
Fuck's sake.
How are you calling an inbred, you inbred?
Elon Musk, that was the one that hurt the most.
You bastard.
I wasn't prepared for that.
Your dad gives it to Lorraine Kelly up the bum. Distracting me. You bastard.
Sorry. How are you?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm all right.
You wrinkly old boot.
Why Lorraine Kelly? Why are you hanging about her?
I don't know, man. Graham Norton's been getting it rotten and all. What the arse!
Wow.
That was intense.
You pedophile!
Oh, man. Deep breaths.
You scared yet?
No yet.
No yet?
No yet.
Did you?
When you start assaulting me, maybe.
Aye. I hope you cuddled your kids extra tight this morning.
Aye.
Before you left for work.
Aye.
Never to be seen again, Daddy. Bye bye, children.
Aye. Has this just started?
Aye. Yeah, it has, to be honest.
Has it?
Fucking hell, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh, there's another clip come out. I'll send this one this week, an update. This is, I guess this will be lesson two. You're having lesson two.
Never to be seen again.
Teenage mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker. Wow.
I've never been called that before. No.
I hope
Graham
Norton watches this video.
Graham Norton, aye.
I bet I'll get in the red chair.
Maybe, aye. I'll definitely get launched back, won't I?
Fuck off. I wouldn't want to walk.
No?
I'd want launched.
Would you want launched?
I'd want launched.
They're talking about this, is it on the Graham Norton show? Do they bring people from the audience in or something? They sit in a red chair and it tips
back.
Them over backwards. I don't watch this shit anyway, so.
Yeah, I've seen a clip.
That's what she's talking about. She'd want to get tipped over, whatever.
Won't I?
Fuck off. I wouldn't want to walk.
No.
I'd want launched.
Would you want launched?
I'd want launched.
Saying here.
Launched into Lorraine Kelly's arsehole. She's getting it stinking off your da. She is getting it rotten today, but aren't
she?
Who's your favourite Teenage Mutant Ninja? What?
Hey, Donatello.
Oh, is it?
Aye.
Michelangelo.
What a bum ticks today.
That's all it bum ticks. Your mum buys tampons from Aldi. She calls them jam packs.
Wee Jamie likes Lorraine Kelly as well.
Does he?
Aye, he's a big fan.
Jamie Nolan, king of the pedos.
Jimmy Nolan can give the pedos.
Get the pedos.
Wow, such a fucking wild thing.
It's like, why is it so funny though?
Because it's so inappropriate.
But it
smashes every taboo.
But
of
it's
what you can say. That's why it's hilarious.
Yeah, but you could just be saying like swears. And doing like weird, you know.
That would be things. Less funny, much less funny. I think.
That's what I mean. But
they're really intricate.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Never to be seen again, Daddy. Bye bye, children.
That's quite funny, though, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's hilarious.
I wonder if that like points towards her personality.
It's a natural comic.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Definitely got comic timing.
Lorraine Kelly, jeez.
Yeah, fuck me. It's great. I mean, you kind of. I don't know, is it right to feel sorry for people with that thing? Is it shit to laugh at it?
I don't know, it depends if they laugh at it, doesn't it, I suppose.
And then yeah, he's laughing, isn't he? He can't help it.
Yeah.
I think it's a natural reaction.
Teenage Mutant... What was it? I had the eyesore, didn't I?
Teenage Mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker.
There you go.
Never been called that before.
No.
Right, let's sign off.
Ah.
It's been good. Good fun.
Mm.
Yeah, see you next week.
Yeah, we can come back next week. Can we?
Maybe.
Can we? I'd like to do it again, but we can't turn the clock back.
We can't turn the black cock black. We can't turn the clock back.
No.
I mean, we'll be here. We'll be here, won't we? Next week?
We'll be here.
I haven't got it. I'm just gone. I'm too tired, boss.
I'm tired, boss.
Tired, boss?
Boss? Yeah.
Sometimes maybe good.
Yeah, incredible
team. Saber? Root beer?
Sometimes maybe good.
Sometimes maybe good. Sometimes maybe shit.
Yeah, maybe a bit shit next week. We'll try better next week.
Sorry about that. We'll try better next week.
Barn raising?
It's a barn raising? This week?
Yeah.
So none of this serious stuff. It'll all just be fun chit chat next week. Ooh. Be great.
Nonsense.
You know. get to unleash our dark side.
And these guys, I mean, they're having fun now, but my goodness, they've also got a dark side.
You have to walk. It's a serious business. It's big boy stuff.
Yeah.
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 So long until I jerk a nut in your ass.
We'll be there. Do you care, though? We'll be there.
Candy.
PSG. We will be there. We'll be there.
Right, thanks for tuning in, folks. Sorry, we're not paying any attention to the chat tonight. Been laughing too much.
I know.
My eyes hurt.
Yeah, she might fuck it off now.
Yeah, man, with a feeling off now.
Right.
Beautiful.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Enormous. And not just the length, it's massive girth.
Okay. What? Probably entertained. See you next week.
Are you not entertained?
Puss party, you dirty bitches!
We're just doing this for your own good.
Congratulations on becoming a doctor of thuganomics.
A sassy chungus pirate from Dazzledon.
Won't you take your out, egg?
Wag Wan Fan, you're going to Somerset.
I'm too fat. I'm too stupid. I'm too lazy. I don't get out of bed in the morning. I smoke drugs.
I never sucked any ding-dongs.
Give me money.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Each time when I come here, I am abused.
Teenage Mutant Elon Musk fuckface wanker.